Universe Today podcast for November 2nd, 2007, rising winds from supermassive black holes. Astronomers now believe there's a supermassive black hole lurking at the heart of every galaxy. When these monsters are actively feeding, an accretion disk of material builds up around them like swirling water waiting to go down the drain. And for the first time, astronomers have detected winds rising up from this disk of doomed material. And it turns out these winds may have a profound impact on the surrounding galaxy. Dr. Andrew Robinson is an associate professor in the Department of Physics at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Andrew is part of the team that detected these winds, announced this week in the journal Nature. Hi, Andy. Welcome to Universe Today.
Hello, Fraser.
All right. Well, now, I guess we're going to have to give people a little bit of background. So can you tell people sort of like what a quasar is?
Yes, certainly. As you said, it's believed that supermassive black holes live at the hearts of essentially all large galaxies. And for some reason, which is not yet fully understood, a number of these become active in the sense that they accrete gas from the surrounding galaxy, which forms this rotating disk. The gas in the disk is extremely hot, and that produces an enormous amount of electromagnetic radiation, which we see as the quasar.
And I guess that's a bit of a misnomer, because people think, when they think black hole, they think nothing, not even light can escape, but in fact they're some of the brightest objects in the universe.
Indeed, but it's actually not the black hole itself we see, it's the gas in the accretion disk that's producing the luminosity, the radiation that we detect.
And that's just a matter of the black hole just can't eat it all fast enough?
In a sense, yes. It is the black hole's gravity which is powering the whole thing. So it pulls gas in towards it, and as that gas falls down towards the quasar, because it's rotating out in the galaxy, it forms a rapidly spinning disk. It doesn't go straight down the plug hole, as it were. So rather like the planets in the solar system, the gas will rotate around the quasar, and as it does so, because of a frictional process, it heats up and emits large amounts of radiation.
All right, now let's talk about your discovery specifically. So what did you see?
Well, we used a technique which is called spectropolarimetry in order to measure the polarization state of the light emitted from near the accretion disk. Now, if you look up into the sky, a nice blue sky, the reason it's blue is because sunlight is being scattered off molecules in the atmosphere. And it just happens that blue light is more effectively scattered by the molecules than red light. And a very similar process happens in these quasars. But as part of the scattering process, the light becomes polarized. Now, light is an electromagnetic wave, so it undergoes vibrations, just like a plucked guitar string, or sort of like a plucked guitar string. The difference between polarized and unpolarized light is that in unpolarized light, there's no preferred direction of vibration. That's random, but in polarized light, there is a preferred direction, and it's that we detect with using spectropolarimetry.
Yeah, I think we did an experiment of that in physics class one time, where we had a string or a rope, and you would sort of wiggle it one way, and the waves would come at you one way, and you wiggle it a different way, and the waves would come at you, you know, vertically or horizontally. And
yeah, that's right. I mean, light is slightly different. Electromagnetic waves are slightly different in that the direction of the vibration is perpendicular to the direction that the wave is moving in. So that's a little bit different from a guitar string.
Right. And so you measured the polarization of the light coming off the quasar, and what did you see?
Okay. Well, we believe that the polarization is due to scattering of light coming from the accretion disk in particles, electrons essentially, in an atmosphere around the accretion disk. We were looking at a particular spectral feature which is strung in quasars, and that's an emission line from hydrogen, the H-alpha line. And we were mapping the variation of polarization with wavelength across that line. And what we saw signatures of two things. We saw a rotation in the angle of polarization, so that's the angle at which the light is vibrating, mapped onto the plane of the sky. And we also saw a Doppler shift. So it turned out that the polarized light, the scattered light, is Doppler shifted relative to the total light coming from the quasar. And those two things, respectively, the the tilt and the angle of polarization is a signature of rotational motions, but the Doppler shift is a rotation, is a thing that is telling us that the gas that's scattering the light from the disk is actually moving away from the disk at quite a high speed.
Okay, so we've got the rotation of the accretion disk, which you can measure as one way, and we've got the gas lifting up from the disk itself, and that's a second thing you're able to detect independently.
Yes, from two different aspects of the polarized light that we detect. But we also think that the gas that's rising up from the disk is itself rotating. So it's not just the rotation of the disk that's causing the rotation and the polarization position angle. It means the wind is rotating as well. So if we have a wind which is rising up from the disk but is also rotating, then that leads us to think that the wind itself is launched from the disk.
Wow, that must be just amazing to see. It's too bad it's billions of light years away.
Yes, what we see actually is in the form of a spectrum. We can't get an image of this process, and that's the reason we're using polarimetry. In fact,
why is this wind being generated?
Okay, there are a number of different theories as to how a disk might launch a wind, and in fact, you can argue that the disk has to launch a wind in order to work at all, because, as we said, it's spinning rapidly, and that rotational motion, just as with the planets orbiting the sun, prevents the gas from moving inwards to the center and eventually falling into the black hole. So somehow some of that rotational energy has to be removed from the rotating gas, and launching a wind is one way of doing it.
Oh, so if you didn't have some way of removing the energy, what would happen?
Well, you wouldn't get accretion. So the accretion disk itself would essentially shut down. It would just have spinning gas around the quasar. So you wouldn't have a quasar.
So you would just have, at a certain point, the material would stop falling into the black hole, and you would just have this disk rotating around the black hole in a nice, stable, perfect orbit, happy forever.
Unless you can find a way of dissipating some of the rotational energy, turning it into thermal energy, which gets radiated away, then you won't see the quasar.
And so this wind coming up off of the disk acts like a brake on all the individual particles and causes them to spiral inward and keep the whole engine running.
That's a possibility. It's believed that magnetic fields also play an important role in this as well. So it's not just the wind, but certainly producing wind will help the disk to remove some of its rotational energy.
And so what happens to this wind then? I mean, there's obviously a lot of energy and material being generated. Where does it go? What does it do?
Well, that's a good question. It goes out into the galaxy in some sense. The material coming off the disk is actually observed in the spectra of quasars. We know about a certain type of quasar known as a broad absorption line quasar, and the absorption lines are believed to be due to material flowing away from the quasar. So there are signatures and winds coming off quasars. What hasn't been done before, those observations don't tell you is how the winds themselves are launched. And eventually the material will go out into the interstellar medium of the galaxy and carry along with it its kinetic energy, its energy of motion.
But if this wind is rising up above the plane of the galaxy, is it just going to make its way out into interstellar space, or is it going to somehow interact with the rest of the galaxy?
Well, quasars can certainly shoot out jets of relativistic gas, rapidly moving gas to very large distances. We see those as gigantic radio sources. These winds are somewhat different. The phenomenon that produces the radio sources are believed to be more jet-like. These are broader winds with wider opening angles, more cone-like.
Right, I can see the difference. With the jets, they're very much like lasers, almost like lasers of material coming out
on
both sides.
Exactly.
While this is more of a gentle wind rising up from the whole disk. And gentle being a very relative term.
Yes, gentle is very much a relative term because the speeds in these winds are really enormously high compared to everyday experience here on Earth, typically around about 20,000 kilometers per second. These winds are enormously fast, just not as fast as the jets that produce the giant radio sources. So presumably the gas will ultimately, I can envisage two fates for the gas. It might merge with the interstellar medium in the host galaxy, the gas between the stars. It might act like a sort of fountain and get so far and then be pulled back by the gravity of the central black hole.
Do you think that there's any connection between this material pouring out of the accretion disk and, you know, periods of star formation in the galaxy? I mean, I know that that there's, and I guess this is maybe separate, is that I know there's a link between the mass of the supermassive black hole and the size of the galaxy. Do you think this could have play some role in that?
That's an interesting question. Yes, you are right. We do know this very, very clear link between the mass of the black hole and actually the size and mass of the central bulge of the galaxy. How that comes about is not really understood yet. There are a number of different ideas about that, but quasar feedback may well play a role in producing this link. Whether it generates star formation or actually disrupts star formation, I think is not quite clear. So what you are doing really is carrying out quite a large amount of kinetic energy and putting it in the gas that would form stars. Now, I can imagine driving out a shock front like a bow wave, which would tend to concentrate the gas surrounding the quasar, and that increase in density could trigger star formation. On the other hand, the additional energy you're putting in might prohibit it.
I guess we'll have to wait for a future research paper then.
Yes, I mean this is currently a very active field, so I'm sure we'll be hearing more on that topic fairly soon.
So what part of this would you like to look at next?
We only have the one object at the moment in which we've seen these features, so clearly we would like to go out and observe some more, and the things we would particularly like to do would be to look at objects which have a range of black hole masses. So if we look at our own galaxy, we have a central black hole which has a mass of about 3 million times the mass of the Sun. But there are other galaxies which have central black hole masses of a billion times the mass of the Sun, or even more. So one question really is, does black hole mass, does the luminosity of the quasar play a role in determining whether or not you get a powerful wind from the accretion disk? And to answer that question, we would have to look at a wider range of objects to determine the conditions under which winds are launched.
Well, I look forward to that. All right, well, Dr. Robinson, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dr. Andrew Robinson is an associate professor in the Department of Physics at the Rochester Institute of Technology. He spoke to me from his office in Rochester, New York. Now, you can get more space and astronomy news from my website at universetoday.com. You can send me any questions, comments, or feedback to info@universetoday.com. And you might also enjoy Astronomy Cast, a weekly podcast that I do with Dr. Pamela Gay. You can find that at astronomycast.com. Thanks for listening.